Our castaway this week, one of the leading figures in British dance music in its great days, Roy Fox. Roy, although you've lived in this country so long, you are an American, aren't you?
That's right.
Could you reconcile yourself to loneliness on this island?
Well, I suppose I could, Roy, because although I've been in contact with millions of people all my life, I think the sort of life I've led and the way I live these days, I'm pretty much of a loner, I would say.
What was your plan in choosing your 8 discs for the desert island?
Well, I like to sort of remember back throughout my life and remember people and things that happened, and I think that has sort of kept me going.
What's the first one you've chosen?
Well, the first one is by someone that I've always admired a great deal, someone I knew very well since I was about 20 years old. It was when I had my first band, my first dance band in Hollywood, just outside of Hollywood in Culver City, right across the street from the MGM Studios. It was a very famous nightclub, beautiful place, and I had this band, and I used to go down the road, down Washington Boulevard, to a place called the Green Mill, where there was a colored band just come out from, I think, from Chicago. And I used to go down and listen to this band, and this record that I would like to remember him by was called Mac the Knife. And I'm sure that when you hear it, you'll know who I'm talking about.
Prizes. Louis Armstrong, of course. What's your second disc?
This time it's Claire de Lune, and the reason I play this record because I used to play in a lot of movies with my band, and this one day I went to Fox Films, and I was playing in a nightclub set, and I looked down and saw a most beautiful extra, a girl, and sitting at a table, and it didn't take me long to get her on the dance floor, and my band played some music while I was setting up the cameras for the next shot. And I asked her name, and she said, well, she had to change it because she'd selected 4 names. She had to select one of them because her grandfather would disinherit her if he knew she was in Hollywood trying to break into film. So she asked me the one I would prefer out of the 4, and I selected the name of Jean Harlow, and that's what she called herself. And I started going around with her. I went around with her for about a year, and during that time, one of the numbers that we liked and used to play very often, I suppose you could call it our favorite tune, was Claire de Lune.
Tchaikovsky conducting his own arrangement of Debussy's Claire de Lune. Now, back to the beginning, Roy. We've established that you were a band leader in Hollywood. Were you born in California?
No, I was born in Denver, Colorado, but I arrived in Hollywood when I was 6 months old.
Do you come from a musical family?
Well, yes. My mother and father both played guitars. They sang quite well. My sister, Vera, played the piano. She had a beautiful voice. So, well, I suppose you'd call that a musical family.
When did you get interested?
Well, I waited till I was about 11 years old, and it started when I looked into the window of a second-hand shop, and I saw a nice little cornet in the window there, so I talked my mother into spending $11 to buy me my first cornet.
What was your first job when you left school? Did you go straight into music?
No, I didn't. Although I could play the cornet a bit, I went into the Los Angeles Trust and Savings Bank as a messenger boy.
Yes.
I felt that I probably owned the bank before long, so I thought that was a pretty good thing to take up as a career.
Yeah, a good bank reference is always a good thing.
Yes, well, I wanted to be a bank owner.
How long did you stay in the bank?
I stayed there for about 2 years, and during that time, I had an offer to go out to the Los Angeles Country Club and play in a small five-piece band, Saturday Night Dances. And so I played my cornet, and I found out that in a very short time, I was making as much on Saturday nights as I was during my stay at the bank.
Yeah.
So I decided to give up the bank.
Mm-hmm. And you used to play for some of the big film parties, I believe, gigs.
Yes. I used to play in many of the parties for, Tom Mix and all the different stars in Hollywood at the time. You know, we'd finish at wherever we were playing in the club and then go out and play a party all night. Maybe William Randolph Hearst and Marion Davies or Chaplin or whoever it might be, you know.
Did you take the cabaret with you? Did you hire guest artists or with your band?
No, by that time, I had the Paul Whiteman Rhythm Boys singing with me.
Crosby, Al Rinker, and Harry Bears.
That's right. And I used to give them each $50 a night. I'm sure Bing Crosby could make a lot more today than he did at that time with me. So now I'd like you to hear a tune that they made famous while they were singing with me called Mississippi Mud.
When the sun goes down, the tide goes out, the darkies gather round and they all begin to shout. Hey, hey, Uncle Dud, it's the street to beat your feet on the Mississippi Mud. It's the street to beat your feet on the Mississippi Mud. Oh, what a dance do they do. Lordy, how I'm telling you, they don't need no band. They can time by clapping their hands. Just as happy as a cow, chewing on a cud when the darkies beat the feet on the Mississippi Mud.
The Paul Whiteman Rhythm Boys. What brought you to England for the first time?
Well, I was at Fox Films. I was head of the musical production department, making the big musicals they made at the time. And one day I received a cable to come over here and bring my American band, which I did. That was in 1930.
Yes.
And I came over here. I thought I was coming over for 8 weeks. And it developed into, just over about 43 years.
And after your Café de Paris engagement, you formed a British band.
That's right.
Where did you play, first of all?
Well, when I left the Café de Paris, I went into the Monseigneur restaurant, and I formed the British band there. As a matter of fact, I'd formed it just before that because I had been signed by Decca to become musical director for Decca Records. Mm. And then when this new restaurant was being built, I was offered the job, and that's when we started.
BBC Late Night Dance Music every Wednesday. Wednesday was Roy Fox night, wasn't it?
That was the night, yes.
You were a good showman, Roy. You were reputed to have the best set of tales in London.
Yes, well, I can thank Jack Buchanan for that because my opening night, the Café de Paris, after leaving Hollywood, I came over and I had a terrific tuxedo made, and I thought that I was very smart, and I had a terrific bow tie with a little white pinstripe in it. I thought I was really something, and I opened, and I noticed a lot of people, were in these tails and white ties, and so Jack Buchanan was there my opening night, and he called me over and went to sat down at the table with him, and he said, Roy, he said, the music's great, he said, but I hope you don't mind me mentioning the fact that just look around the room, you see all these people, he said, you see that? And down there, and he pointed to the Prince of Wales, and he said, everybody has white ties, but he said, if you don't mind, I'd like to meet you tomorrow and take you to my tailor, and I think you should have some tails and a white tie, which I did.
An investment that paid off. Mm-hmm. Then you began to play the music halls very successfully.
That's right. We went on tour then. I gave up the West End nightclubs, and I went on tour.
And made records and broadcast.
That's right.
You went off to Australia.
Yes, and I had a great Australian band, very fine musicians, and I was playing my arrangements from here. And I toured the country, and then it was time for me to come back to London. So I went up to see the American consulate when I flew to Melbourne from Sydney to see the Melbourne Cup race. I was always interested in racing.
Yeah.
And so he told me that he had to cancel my passport because, being an American, I wasn't allowed to come back to London. I wanted to entertain the British troops because the war was on. But I couldn't get back, so I had to go back to Hollywood.
Yes.
Then from there, I had an offer to go into the Rainbow Room in New York. Then I left there and I went up to another nightclub just opening on 57th Street. And in our first cabaret, we had a boy that had been singing with Tommy Dorsey and Harry James, and that was Frank Sinatra. Then from there, I went to the Savoy Plaza Hotel and waited there until I had the okay to come back to London.
Fine. Well, let's have record number four. What's that?
Well, this time it's a record that was made by a young pianist. I used to go, after working at a night in some of these clubs, I used to go to a place called Spivey's Roof. And I used to love to hear him play, you see. And, my judgment must have been right because his name turned out to be Liberace.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to hear him now.
Yes, I think I'd like to hear him playing a recording of a tune he used to play up there on the roof. It's called Intermezzo.
Liberace playing Intermezzo. So, when the war was over, you came back to England, Roy. Another band to form?
That's right, yes. I formed a new band here and started out in a very smart club called the Milroy Club.
Yes.
And I played there for several months until I decided to go out on variety again.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it coincided with that very hard winter we had. I believe it was 1947.
Oh, the big freeze-up, yes.
The freeze-up, that's right. And everybody lost their money, including me, and it was very difficult at that time.
Everybody got frozen up, including you.
Exactly.
I believe that led to some rather tough years. You had to sort of play one nights and whatever dates you could get for a while.
That's right.
To get on your feet.
That's right. And we go out and play a lot of the places we used to play. I mean, you know, dances were, before the war, you couldn't even get near the place, you know, unless you bought your ticket in advance. But then I noticed that there weren't so many people coming into the same halls that we used to play. And it just didn't turn out the way that I would like to have had it.
And nowadays?
Well, I'm in personal management, and I'm representing actors, straight actors, that appear in film and television.
Yes.
And I enjoy what I'm doing now.
Now, of course, there's a big nostalgia boom going on at the moment, and lots of your 78 discs are now reissued on long players.
That's right. I think there are about six out at the present time, with another on the way.
Splendid. Let's have record number five. What's that to be?
Well, this time it takes me back to about 1925 or 26, I guess it was. And it was a tune I was playing in a speakeasy on 54th and Broadway in New York. And one of the people that used to frequent the club very often was Al Capone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, one of the tunes that I played at the time, I think, it's one of the greatest lyrics of any tune that I've ever heard, of all the thousands of tunes I've played. And it's sung by one of my very favorite performers, Sammy Davis Jr.
You gotta believe me, they nursed it, and they rehearsed it, and then they gave out the news that the Southland really gave birth to the blues.
Sammy Davis, Jr. Roy, what are the chances of good musician-led dance bands coming back?
I should think they will one of these days. Of course, it'll be a very expensive thing. It won't be like pre-war because now it'd be almost impossible, I should think, to tour a large band on the road. Not so long ago, I was approached by a West End hotel to come back to the West End with my band.
Yes.
And I considered the idea because I should think it'd be interesting. That is, if I could have the kind of band I'd like to have. I think there's every likelihood that that could happen. Not in this one place who approached me, but I think that there's every possibility that could happen. And I think that the big bands, once the kids hear it, and I know even now a lot of the letters I get and the people get in touch with me are, you know, very young boys and girls that, you know, they love the groups, but once they hear my records and the records of the 30s bands, Ambrose, the different bands, they seem to appreciate that kind of music.
What's the next record?
Well, I suppose it's one of my all-time favorite pieces of music. It dates back all the way to the first night that Paul Whiteman opened with his very first band in the Alexandria Hotel in Los Angeles. And he played this wonderful Rhapsody in Blue.
Paul Whiteman and his concert orchestra with Roy Bargy at the piano. In your career, Roy, have you had any experiences that could be useful in preparing you for a desert island existence?
Well, I suppose on a desert island you'd have to do a bit of cooking. And fortunately, when I was 12 years old in Los Angeles going to school, I and the rest of the boys in the school had to take cooking class. I think that I learned to cook pretty well, and I think that might be most useful.
There wouldn't be a lot to cook, unless you could find it.
Well, I used to do a lot of fishing one
That's
time.
Good.
I'd get me a little pin and a string or something and go out and catch some fish, and then I'd know how to cook them.
Did you ever do anything with small boats?
No, I'm a very, very bad sailor, and I don't think I'd, if it required taking a boat and leaving the island, I think I'd stay right there.
Right, record number 7, what's that?
Well, now for something that I think is really very, very soothing. It's something I can close my eyes and really enjoy listening to, and that's Nocturne in E-flat.
The Chopin.
That's it.
Thank you. Wolfgang Schneiderhan playing Chopin's Nocturne in E-flat major. Now we come to your last record. What's that?
Well, Roy, inasmuch as I would like to have a recording of my own band just to remember the gang, you know, the fun we had and the nice times, I'd like to take my recording, my last recording of Whispering.
Yes, Whispering, your signature tune.
That's right.
Whispering by the Roy Fox Orchestra. If you could take just one disc, which would it be?
I think, Roy, that would be the record I'd take, my own record of Whispering.
Right. And one luxury to take with you?
If I could get the batteries, I think I'd like to have a radio.
Yes, well, we can provide the batteries. You can have solar batteries. No worry there. We can't guarantee reception.
All right, I'll take that chance.
And one book, apart from the Bible, Shakespeare, and big encyclopedias?
Well, I think I'd take the easiest crossword puzzles I could find.
Right. And thank you, Roy Fox, for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
Well, Roy, I'd just like to say how much I enjoyed being on your program, and I hope everyone has enjoyed it as much as I have.
Goodbye, everyone.